Well, you're sitting down.
Are you sitting down? I'm ready.
Go for it.
Thank you.
Don't waste a minute. You are?
May it please the court, counsel for the respondent, my client, Mr. Brown, I had an opportunity to review the court's order stating to be prepared.
I'm sorry, he's a respondent? I thought he was appellant.
I'm sorry, Mr. Brown is the appellant. I was, may it please the court, can...
On the respondent, okay, I'm sorry, I got it. You're representing the appellant,
I
Mr.
represent
Brown.
The appellant, Douglas Brown.
Okay.
Yes, it's a case against the city of Caldwell.
Entirely under state law?
Entirely under state law.
Why shouldn't we send it to the Idaho Supreme Court? It looks like a close question, undetermined by, why shouldn't we send this to Idaho and let them tell us? It's an important statute. It's the Idaho Whistleblower Act. I would think that's something that the... I don't want to preempt your argument. I'm just... As I was reading this case... I mean, we have a number of cases on the calendar today that might raise that issue. But this one in particular struck me as one that...
Yes,
I'd essentially in my mind have to flip a coin as to how to interpret... I don't mean literally. I just meant, it's close.
Yes.
Why is that the kind of case that we would send to the state Supreme Court and see whether they'd be willing to help us out?
I'm not so certain it wouldn't be the type of case you would send to the Supreme Court and let them chew on it and figure it out. We're here before the Ninth Circuit this morning.
Making your argument, we do have that. It's just a trip to Moscow, right? That's where the Supreme Court is?
Well, it's actually in Boise, Idaho.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, fair question, Your Honor. I don't know how to answer it other than that perhaps the Idaho Supreme Court would care to take a look at it. We don't believe on appeal that it's as close as perhaps...
Okay. Why don't you go ahead with the argument?
Thank you. The order was for us to talk about, as a matter of first impression, whether or not the Idaho Supreme Court would adopt a but-for standard on causation under the Idaho Whistleblower Act. We submit that the Idaho Supreme Court would not do that. We don't believe that it would really have much ground to get even necessarily close to doing that. In Idaho, like I imagine every jurisdiction, the objective of statutory construction is to discern the intent of the legislature.
The expressed intent of the legislature
in this particular case, yes. And so, of course...
The key word here is because, right?
Yes, I believe it is the key word.
And district judge, very fine district judge.
Very fine district judge.
Well steeped in Idaho law.
Yes, sir.
Looks at it and says, because means but for. Something can't be because if doing it wouldn't have made a difference.
Or, yes.
So it has to be the sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back or the thing that causes it to go over the top. It just strikes me as entirely plausible of reading the statute.
I wouldn't say it's entirely implausible.
I mean, statute of construction is not easy. It's not easy, but it seems to me this is just one easy way of looking at it and saying it says because.
Yes.
You say it's not because if it's not but for.
Yes. Well, the district court here certainly grabbed onto the language of the word because in the statute and found that it necessitated a but-for standard. We argue in appeal that it does not necessitate a but-for standard. And I turn primarily to 6-2101, which is the legislative intent. That particular section of the statute talks about how the Whistleblower Act is designed to protect the integrity of the government. That's the stated legislative purpose of the act. And then the legislature also provides a mechanism as to how we are going to protect the integrity of the government. And that is by granting a cause of action to public employees who have suffered adverse action in the employment arena for blowing the whistle.
And what is the alternative? Did you, you objected to the interpretation of the district court. Did you offer an alternative jury instruction?
I don't believe we did offer a written alternative jury
instruction. Well, maybe not written. Did you say here's what we would like instead? So let's say we rejected but-for, or we wanted to consider rejecting it by contrasting it to what else we would say. What would be the alternative, and did you present that to the district court?
Yes, we presented a jury instruction that set forth the prima facie case under the Whistleblower Act, and then under the verdict form, we talked about the Whistleblower Act and talked about how, on the causation standard, if the government's motive is, or if retaliation is a motivating factor of the government in causing the adverse action, then that motivating factor would be the standard.
So I understand. So under the district court's interpretation, has to be the factor that's operative. Whether your interpretation is, if it was a multiplicity of factors, and one of them was retaliation, that would be enough. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just trying to.
I believe that's
correct. Tell you my understanding of.
But if you accept what Judge Kaczynski has just suggested to you, and I would agree that's the best you can do, there's a little problem with that. Because can mean two things. It can be a cause or be the cause, right? You don't like be the cause. That's but for. You like be a cause.
Yes.
But listen to this portion of the instruction to which you objected to. That means that Mr. Brown's claim cannot succeed unless his communication in good faith of an actual or suspected violation of law, rule, or regulation played a role in the city's decision to take adverse action against him and had a determinative effect, influence on the outcome. His communication of an actual or suspected violation need not be the only cause. So therefore, didn't you get a be a cause rather than be the cause instruction out of it?
Well, I would disagree with that.
You could argue to the jury that this instruction allows recovery based on retaliation, even though there were other causes for his being sanctioned.
That's true.
Did you argue that?
I believe we did, yes. Yeah.
The jury didn't buy it.
The last section of this instruction that you're looking at, instruction number 18, that's where you find the but-for language.
Right, but it also comes along with it need not be the only cause. So but-for is a little bit limbed off, isn't it? Sanded.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
only cause.
The language but-for in and of itself suggests that it doesn't have to necessarily be the only motive, and we don't have to prove that it's the only motive. We have to prove that it would be the thrust of the motive, and we believe that's contrary to the purpose of the Whistleblower Act because it's designed to protect the integrity of the government. And if that's the design, why do we want to create a stiffer burden for the employee?
See, here's where we get back to my question, my original question, and that is, what alternative did you put before the district court? I understand, as Judge Baer has pointed out, this instruction has parts in it that are helpful to you and parts in it that are less helpful to you. So, and you could have argued based on this, look, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, it doesn't have to be the only cause. But I think you're right that you could have done something that would have been more helpful to you. And then my question then is, before we reverse a district judge, before we set aside a verdict, I would like to see what did you give the district judge as an alternative say, look, here's the better way or here's the preferred way, judge, I accept this instead. If you didn't, I have a hard time reversing.
The best I can do is point you to our verdict form that we did submit to the
court. Which is where?
It's in excerpt of record, volume number 2.
Okay, and what page?
Page 69. Okay. And it's question 1 there.
Wow, it's so tiny. Lawyers never think that people actually have to read these things. Question one, was Douglas Brown's, so this is, what I'm looking at right now is your version of the special verdict form, right?
Yes, Judge.
Was Douglas Brown's participation or involvement in a protected activity, as the findings and instructions, a motivating factor in his termination or other adverse employment action?
And so we asked the court to take a look at the language motivating factor.
But this is not an instruction. Did you have an instruction to match it?
We did. It's instruction number four in the same excerpt of record on page 88, where we set forth the elements of the prima facie case.
Let me just get to that for a sec. Okay, and which part of this helps?
This instruction outlines the three elements of the prima facie case. The third element there would be the causation prong, where we talk about a causal connection, which is right out of the language from the Idaho Supreme Court opinions. And then, of course, when you get to the, you read these elements in the jury instructions, and then, of course, the jury reads it and then gets to the verdict form and sees the reference to motivating factor. And we believe that that's the standard that our legislature intended for the Whistleblower Act, primarily based on that statute 6-2101 that talks about the purpose of the act, and it's designed to protect the integrity of the government. And that is unique in employment arena statutes. This Idaho legislature is, we submit, not going to create a more difficult burden, a but-for type burden, on an employee in the public employment sector when that same legislature gave that very same employee that legal cause of action to protect the integrity of the government. And if we really want to give the employee a cause of action to protect the integrity of the government, we're not, the legislature is not.
What do you make of Hathaway? Hathaway versus Board of Regents?
Hathaway v. Board of Regents, I believe, was a recent decision from the Idaho Supreme Court. And I don't know that I could recount for you the facts of the case, but I didn't believe that it really weighed in on the subject matter.
Well, it interpreted a statute that it was an age discrimination statute, and the language is because of or in the basis of age, Idaho Code 67-59091. And they said, but for.
Yes, Your Honor. And in that particular case, what the Supreme Court did is there's a legislative mandate under the Idaho Human Rights Act that our courts are to look to the federal law to embody the policies of federal law when adjudicating cases brought under the either Title VII. The Idaho legislative enactment combines the Title VII theories with the disability theories and age theories. And so in that particular act, at Idaho Code 67-5901, Parent 1, the legislature indicated that it wanted our courts to embody federal procedure, and so that's why the court went off in the direction it did in that particular case. It followed the Gross case, another age discrimination case that talks about but for.
Okay.
But we believe it's distinguished from our action.
About a minute left. Do you want to save it?
I would like to save it. Thank you.
Okay. We'll hear from the other side.
Thank you, members of the court, counsel. I'm Bruce Castleton. I represent the city of Caldwell, Idaho, in this proceeding. I would say that the case of Hathaway is very helpful in this court's consideration of what the Idaho Supreme Court would do with the causation factor under a state whistleblower claim.
What's your answer to Chief Judge Kaczynski's question regarding certifying this question to the Idaho Supreme Court?
I would refer to the answer that was given in one of the previous cases, which is we would certainly prefer to the court to consider here, because I think that there's more than enough basis for this court to consider the question. But at the same time, I can't disagree that this would be a very good question that would go through certification to the Idaho Supreme Court, where obviously that court is the ultimate determiner of Idaho law or the Idaho statutes.
It's not just Idaho law, but it's Idaho law dealing with government employees, right?
Correct, Your Honor. That's right.
Which is, I would think, possibly of particular interest to the state Supreme Court and the people of Idaho to make sure it's decided correctly according to Idaho law, right?
I would certainly agree there's a large state interest that's involved in this particular case, in this subject matter and this statute, and at the same time there's a great lack of any guidance as to this particular question, although, again, with the Hathaway decision, I think we have very substantial indirect authority that I think would translate directly to the case.
In Hathaway, taking what your learned friend just said, they directed the state to follow federal law regarding age discrimination. Is there any similar direction with respect to retaliation in this case?
Well, I think the answer is yes. First of all, in Hathaway, the second claim that was determined by the Idaho Supreme Court was a retaliation claim, albeit under the state's Human Rights Act. However, in dealing with that, the Hathaway court set forth a prima facie case for state retaliation that is identical to the prima facie case that was established by the same court in Curley, which is one of the seminal whistleblower cases that the court is familiar with. It established the same three prongs, which incidentally are the same three prongs that this court established for a Title VII retaliatory claim under the Villarimo case. It's also in the Hathaway case that the Idaho Supreme Court cites to the Villarimo case to say, to touch upon matters of evidence in a retaliation claim. Again, that's not a direct link, but that is the Idaho Supreme Court that's being persuaded by this court's ruling. What's also significant in Villarimo is that this court found with a Title VII retaliation claim that met a but-for causation standard. In fact, this court held similarly to jury instruction number 18.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's say we looked at it and we said the but-for interpretation is wrong. We disagree with it, and we think that the Idaho Supreme Court would hold otherwise. Is instruction given prejudicially, is it wrong at all, given if we assume that's what the law is?
The but-for causation standard?
Well, the instruction is, as Judge Bea has walked it over with your...
jury instruction 18.
With your opponent, the instruction is somewhat ambiguous. It seems to blow both ways, right? And I'm just wondering, let's say that we think the but-for part is wrong. Is that an instruction wrong?
I don't believe it is, because if you go to this court's decision in Villarimo, the language is substantially similar to jury instruction 18. This court held in Villarimo, to establish causation, the plaintiff must show by a preponderance of the evidence that engaging in the protected activity was one of the reasons for his firing, and that but for such activity, he would not have been fired. That's similar to instruction 18, where the jury needs to find that the protected activity was part of the reason, at least part of the reason, for the adverse employment action, but then to take the additional step and say that but for that protected activity, he would not have been terminated. And I think that that's what's uniform here between this court's decision and jury instruction 18. And when you tie the Villarimo case over to Hathaway, I think we have a substantial link in terms of what the Idaho Supreme Court would look to. But I understand that that's an indirect link. And what I would also point to in the Curley decision, which did not involve the federal anti-discrimination statutes, and so the guidance that were given, as counsel had alluded to, that, well, if we're dealing with discrimination statutes, we always look to federal, which is typically true in Idaho cases. In Curley and the whistleblower statute, our Idaho Supreme Court likewise looked to other jurisdictions to determine whether Idaho would adopt the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting framework. And when they looked to other statutes, they or to other states, they largely looked to federal courts. The LaFon decision was a Second Circuit decision interpreting the Connecticut whistleblower claim. Stevens was an Eastern District of Missouri case interpreting that state's whistleblower statute. In both of those cases, those courts found that when they were looking at the state whistleblower statute, they would look to the federal anti-discrimination statutes for guidance on how to construe that. And these are the cases that the Idaho Supreme Court cited to in Curley as persuasive authority as to whether the state of Idaho should adopt the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting framework. I don't think it's a stretch to say that Idaho would likewise look to federal courts in terms of how to construe the causation standard for a whistleblower claim, because they've already looked at federal courts for just McDonnell-Douglas itself. The natural flow of that would be, well, if we get past McDonnell-Douglas and we get to trial, how do we construe the causation standard for whistleblower? I think it's very likely that the Supreme Court would again look to federal statute, particularly something like the Title VII retaliation claim. And how do federal courts interpret that? And if we're looking at that, this court has said in Villarimo, it's a but-for causation standard.
Okay, thank you.
I do want to touch very quickly upon the Bollinger case that was cited to by the Mr. Brown in his appellant brief. Bollinger has cited this, asserting that in cases of retaliation, the causation standard should only be some motive related to the protected activity. We have to understand what Bollinger was. Bollinger, obviously, and as counsel has conceded, was not a state whistleblower claim. It was rather a case that was brought under the public policy exception to the at-will doctrine. The plaintiff in that case had engaged in what she believed were protected activities in recommending certain safety measures be taken by her employer, who then, she claims, terminated her for it. Ms. Bollinger then sued, claiming this public policy exception to the at-will doctrine. What the Idaho Supreme Court found in that case, what the significant part of that, did not have to do with any type of a causation standard. It had to do with whether she had a case under the public policy exception to begin with, and it found she did not. Public policy has to be grounded in statute or the Constitution somehow in order for that to come into effect. The Idaho Supreme Court looked at that and said, nothing that you did touches upon any statutory or constitutional expression of policy, and thus it wasn't protected. But as courts do sometimes, the Idaho Supreme Court took it a step further, because by the first step she had already lost. But going a step further, it says, but even if you had engaged in these protected activities, you did not present any evidence that it was linked to your termination. It did not go into a causation standard. It did not weigh anything. It just simply said, you have no evidence to show motivation. In Van v. Portnoy, which is cited in the briefing, which is an Idaho state whistleblower claim, the Idaho Supreme Court specifically accepted whistleblower claims from the public policy exception to the at-will doctrine, and thus Bollinger really has no application here. There was no dealing with the causation standard, and it's not a case that applies to the Whistleblower Act. I would just submit to the court that there is nothing in the legislative history, there's nothing in the language of the statute itself, meaning the whistleblower claim, that indicates that the state of Idaho, the legislature, meant for there to be anything other than the but-for causation by using the language because of. In Hathaway, the Idaho Supreme Court specifically looked at that phrasing in Gross and said, this is what but-for means. I'm sorry, this is what because of means. It means the but-for causation. I don't think there's any reason to believe the Idaho Supreme Court would do differently in this case here. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You have about a minute left.
Thank you. The statute doesn't say because of. The statute says because the, which is another distinguishing characteristic from this case and the federal cases that the city of Idaho continues to cite to. Because the, I would submit, is softer than because of. And if we look at the Idaho Supreme Court case of Curley, that case set forth the prima facie elements of a whistleblower cause of action. There are three elements. The third element, of course, is a causation prong. And when it cites to that third element, the Idaho Supreme Court makes express reference to those very sections of the statute that use the word because, 6-2104 and 6-2105, parent 4. And the Supreme Court, when announcing the elements of the prima facie case, did not apply or instruct the but-for standard. The third prong does not say that an employee must show adverse action would not have occurred but for the protected activity. And so we submit that in this case, where the Idaho legislature has designed the statute to protect the integrity of itself and the other public entities, they're just not going to apply the
best. Curley was brought up on motion of summary judgment, so the only issue was there sufficient evidence so that a reasonable trier of fact could find that there was a causal connection. It said the close relation in time between the discovery of her documentation and her termination supports the reasonable inference that she was discharged for that documentation. Is the only thing that's missing in that is but for.
Judge Bay, in the Curley case, they set forth the elements of a prima facie case under the Idaho Whistleblower Act, 1, 2, and 3. And if they thought that the because language in those statutes, 6-2104 and 6-2104 parent 5, necessitated a but-for standard, it would be in that third prong of the prima facie case. That's where we would find
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is argued, stands submitted. We are adjourned.
Thank you.